The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This is Wake Up with Randy Corcoran on News Talk 710 KNUS.
We're back now at 10:01, second hour of the show. Thanks to all the texters and emailers. Sorry to the callers, but thanks to everybody else who liked the new hours. I'm mixed. I love the early mornings. I love leaving at 9, but I love being here with you any time of the day on 710 KNUS. And really do appreciate it. I didn't jump on right when the music was winding up here because I was messing around with Stephen Tubbs. And Stephen, buddy, if you're going to leave your email account open on the computer here in the studio, then I'm going to write your mother and your girlfriend and your accountant. Maybe send a quick email to the IRS. And anyway, I didn't do any of those things, but it was kind of fun. And Stephen, if you're listening, I did not even scroll through your emails to see, you know, who's writing. I promise. I just wouldn't do that to a friend. Oh, man, we've got so much going on. And before we wrap up, we're going to do it real quick here in a sec, the Gardner speech, and then talk to Rob Nadelson from the Independence Institute about impeachment. I just got the infamous Google notice, you know, the Google alert notification when my name pops up in a story. And here I am on the Colorado Times Recorder blog. That's Jason Saltzman's blog. And I've popped up in there before, at least my name anyway, if I say something during a show, they listen to the shows and then they'll comment on and usually criticize or spin or whatever, something that has been said, and they'll attach the podcast. I guess it's a way to get listeners for us. But rarely, in fact, I can think of only a few times in the 6 or 7 years I've been an activist now. 11 years, but 6 or 7 years I've been involved in radio, that I've been contacted by Jason or his people to comment on a story. And it happened. And the title of this story, they posted it up yesterday, Conservatives Contrasting Responses After Posting the Confederate Flag. And I'll talk about this more in the 11 o'clock hour, but just to let you know what it is, here's what they say. A blog post promoting a, quote, malicious Second Amendment rally, close quote, in Virginia made the rounds of Colorado conservative Facebook in mid-December. The event, scheduled for January 20, Martin Luther King Day, uses the Confederate flag as its logo. It's a version of the Confederate flag. Of the people and group pages sharing the post, two were relatively prominent. The Montrose County, Colorado Republican Party and KNUS 710 AM radio host Randy Corcoran. You know what? As long as we're into this story, it's my show. People can wait. Let's just finish it. Their responses to inquiries about the post, however, were decidedly different. The Montrose Republican Party immediately removed the post, while talk show host Corcoran reaffirmed his support for the event, the post, the Confederate flag, and even for a narrow, specific, and tongue-in-cheek definition of, quote, white nationalism. And I asked them to take out the tongue-in-cheek after I saw the story, and I thought they did, so maybe I'm seeing an older version of the story. But regardless, when they first wrote it, they called my reference to white nationalism tongue-in-cheek. I did ask them to take that out. I think they did so. Anyway, Montrose GOP's post was noticed by somebody who was one of the Facebook commentators who expressed concern about it on social media. Reached by phone, Montrose GOP chair Ray Langston said that as soon as the post came to his attention, he asked his social media person to remove it. And here's what the GOP chair in Montrose said. It just becomes all about the flag, and that becomes a distraction. I shared it myself on my personal Facebook. I read the article. The person who shared thought it might be of interest since we're dealing with red flag laws here. But all the attention gets drawn to the flag. So once I knew about it, I said, we need to take that down because the message is about the rally, the red flag rally, and not about the flag. And then some leftist elaborates in the story and some more blah, blah, blah. Then they finally get to me. Asked why he shared the post and if he had any concerns about it being perceived as racist or supportive of white nationalism, considering the image, Confederate flag, the date of the event, MLK Day, and the post's militia slash Confederate Army language, Corcoran provided a statement to the Colorado Times Recorder. And you can certainly go online and read this for yourself. But here's what I said. And I told them, look, you're going to refer this. You're going to mention me in this article. I know what the point that you're trying to make. So I will give you a comment as long as you agree to print it in full. And I'll tell you, whatever you think of Jason Saltzman, and we all know, you know, about the contest to go be sent on their contest to the birth hospital of Barack Obama in Hawaii and how that prize was never paid out because who the hell knows where Barack Obama was actually born. There's a topic for another day. Or think about these leftist blogs who spend their time, you know, listening to podcasts of shows or scrubbing people's social media to find things to throw at them. I've always been treated well by Jason Saltzman. And if I tell him, here, you can have my comment as long as you print it in full, they do so. So I've never been treated any differently by them over there. And here's what I said. I shared the post because I and my law firm, Law Offices of Randy B. Corcoran, PC, and I made him put a link in there, are presenting seminars on, writing about, and closely monitoring Colorado's unconstitutional red flag law. How the citizens of other states are responding to red flag is of great interest to me and to those that follow my legal, radio, or social media information and commentary. I have no concerns about, quote, being perceived as racist or supportive of white nationalism, close quote, because the original Facebook poster used a variation of a Confederate flag as background for their post. I scoff at those who interpret a Facebook repost that way. I'm not racist. I'm white. Is that wrong now? And I fully endorse the first paragraph of the white Wikipedia page on nationalism. If by white nationalist, that's what you mean, count me in. And let's pause there for just a minute. Here is what the first page of the Wikipedia, certainly no right-wing website, says about nationalism. Nationalism is an ideology and movement that promotes the interests of a particular nation, especially with the aim of gaining and maintaining the nation's sovereignty, self-governance over its homeland. Nationalism holds that each nation should govern itself, free from outside interference, self-determination, that a nation is a natural and ideal basis for a polity, and that the nation is the only rightful source of political power. And it goes on, and I fully endorse that first paragraph of what they say about, now where in the world did my story go? Anyway, I fully endorse what they say about nationalism there, and I'm white. So if by white nationalists, that's what they're talking about, then of course I agree with it. So I've got to get this thing pulled back up here, and I apologize for it. Here it comes. All right. So I continued. If that's what you mean by white nationalists, then count me in. I continued. I stand up, no kneeling, for and honor the United States of America's flag, in part because I revere American history, warts and all. Confederate flags are part of that history, and I pay no attention to people who, for political reasons, are trying to erase or alter America's history. We are the only nation ever that fought a deadly war with itself to eliminate the scourge of slavery, and I am proud of that. To back away from the hard parts of that history dishonors those who fought bravely and were injured or died as part of that arc of history. And I concluded this way. I know nothing. I guess this wasn't quite my conclusion. I know nothing about the self-described, veteran-owned free speech community that made the post and that did not pay close attention to what you describe as militia Confederate Army language in it. After now reading the post closely, I have no complaints about it. The event they're referencing, Virginia Citizens Defense League Lobby Day, apparently occurs annually on January 20th. If that's true, then it's a coincidence that this year it is also on Martin Luther King Day. Also, apparently, the Virginia legislature will be in session that day and available for lobbying on Second Amendment rights. So, of course, they're going to try and tie this to racism and white supremacy and all of that. And it just simply isn't there. In fact, if you go to the website for the place that put up the original post, there are not a mass number, but there are black people part of that militia group or that veterans group or whatever it is. Veteran-owned free speech community is how they refer to themselves. Anyway, now here is how I concluded. I am disappointed that the Montrose GOP thought it necessary to take down the post. Political correctness is an effective tool, sometimes a sword. Succumbing to it, if that's what Montrose GOP did, is a weakness. Perhaps they didn't do any of the analysis of the original post that I provided above. But I certainly don't care what they do, and it doesn't impact what I do. And they had asked questions about whether because of the Montrose GOP taking it down or because of the recent controversy involving our producer here at the radio station 710 KNUS. And I knew they were going to comment on it whether I did or not. So here's what I said. I certainly don't care what they do, the Montrose GOP, and it doesn't impact what I do. Given that and my other comments above, you can imagine that the controversy involving a KNUS producer likewise has no impact on my decisions, and no, I won't take my repost down. But thanks for asking. Since that's now out in the world, I thought I better share it with you, and I'll thank the Colorado Times reporter for giving me a fair hearing and a fair response. The young man who called me, his name is Eric Malbech, and I told him in a responsive email he acted like a real pro. So anyway, there you have it. 303-696-1971 if you'd like to weigh in on any of that. Let's go ahead and get these last couple of minutes. They were just so good. The entire eight-minute Cory Gardner floor speech on Thursday after the president took out General Soleimani. General, my ass. Call it just terrorist Soleimani. Murderer Soleimani. Murderer. And you know what? If it was a military skirmish, then I would give the general, air quotes, the general, his due respect, combatants on the military field. And by the way, this applies to the Confederacy as well as the North during America's own Civil War. Those people were fighting for causes they believe in. And you can disagree and or rewrite history or not understand the history and the times that those people were living in and what slavery was in those days. You can ignore all that if you want. Those men are still entitled to respect. But not this guy. Soleimani murdered his own people regularly if they didn't toe the regime line over there in Iran. So I'm not going to call him. If I call him general, it's going to be an accident. It's terrorist Soleimani. And here's the rest of what Cory Gardner had to say on the floor of the United States Senate.
Despite all of this, in 2015, the Obama administration rewarded Tehran with a sweetheart deal known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA, which paved a patient pathway to a nuclear weapon for Iran, lifted all meaningful sanctions against the regime, and did nothing to constrain Iran's malign behavior in the region. Iran used the billions and billions of dollars that were provided in the JCPOA to dramatically increase its terror funding and its military funding. The Trump administration rightly exited the JCPOA in May 2018 and reimposed crippling economic sanctions against the regime. They have been clear with Iran. The door to diplomacy remains open if Iran changes its behavior and complies with international norms. On May 21st, 2018, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo delivered a speech at the Heritage Foundation, which clearly stated the administration's objectives. Iran must forego its nuclear aspirations, cease its support for terrorism, and respect the human rights of its people. Secretary Pompeo said, and I quote, Any new agreement will make sure Iran never acquires a nuclear weapon and will deter the regime's malign behavior in a way that the JCPOA never could. We will not repeat the mistakes of past administrations, and we will not renegotiate the JCPOA itself. The Iranian wave of destruction in the region is just the last, in just the last few years, is proof that Iran's nuclear aspirations cannot be separated from the overall security picture. Secretary Pompeo was clear that once Iran changes its behavior, it will reap the benefits, stating that the United States is prepared to end the principal components of every one of our sanctions against the regime. We're happy at that point to reestablish full diplomatic and commercial relationships with Iran. And we're prepared to admit Iran to have advanced technology. If Iran makes this fundamental strategic shift, we too are prepared to support the modernization and reintegration of the Iranian economy into the international economic system. I hope the latest events have made it clear to Tehran that the United States will never back down from protecting our people, our interests, and our allies. So now it's in Tehran's court to choose the path of peace or the path of confrontation. It's my sincere hope that they choose the path of peace. Thank you, Madam President. And I yield the floor.
8 minutes of real strong support for the president who he named and the administration, the policies, the decisions to take out the Iranian terrorist, on and on and on. If you want to hear that uninterrupted or share it with others, follow me on Twitter at Randy Corporan. You can grab it right there and retweet it. You can go to Cory Gardner's website or Twitter feed as well and grab it. And, of course, all of this stuff will be available on the podcasts of the show, which are typically up, boy, almost within minutes after the hour, because the whippersnapper back there is whipping and snapping all the time. We're going to go ahead and take our break now so we can spend some good time with Rob Nadelson talking about impeachment. He's a constitutional law scholar cited numerous times by the Supreme Court. He's a local treasure, works out of the Independence Institute here in Colorado. And we'll be talking with him next right here on Wake Up with Randy Corporan, 710 KNUS.
We now return to Wake Up with Randy Corporan on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Monday, worry of mean strife. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean pride.
It's nice to squeeze a little rush in, you know. As a freshly 60-year-old man, seeing somebody go at 67 is an eye-opener. 10:22, sun is bright and shiny. Hope to see you 1 o'clock on the west steps of the Capitol in support of life, protecting life in the womb. A march follows at 2. That's today. And chilly, but not a bad day for it. Just a great thing. Even if you just stop by for a while, numbers matter. And people like to feel supported. People like to know that they are not alone. And appreciate all the emailers. You can email the show, 710knus.com. Go to Wake Up with Randy Corporan. Big red button, email the show. If the texters are busy this morning, you can text to the studio. If you're listening on the 710KNUS app, little button that says text to studio. That's a lot of fun. I can respond live when I'm not talking or when I'm on a break. And in the 11 o'clock hour, we'll spend a few minutes with a very special lady, Lauren Boebert, who took on the crazy and no longer presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke when he was in Aurora on his promise to confiscate our guns, and has now taken that energy and passion and enthusiasm, turned it into a primary challenge against Colorado Congressman Scott Tipton. We'll talk to her about that. And then I want to play a bunch of a really good interview that was done with Matt Gaetz on the War Room impeachment series, where he explains his reason to, from some perspectives, side with Nancy Pelosi and vote for her her War Act and War Powers Act resolution. And I think you'll find that very, very fascinating. Gosh, great opportunity then to go back to open lines. If you tried to call earlier and we didn't get you, 303-696-1971, 303-696-1971. And, you know, the one thing I don't think I got to finish with you, did I, was the final 2 minutes of the Trump speech. And it is well worth hearing because I'll tell you what, again, this was all within two, three, four, just barely 4 minutes into the announcement speech by President Donald J. Trump that he was going to be running for president of the United States. And as we heard in the first segment, he called out his opponents, said if they can't even manage the rooms that they're going in to campaign, how in the world are they going to take out ISIS? That was within 44 seconds. The next minute, he hit China and Mexico and all of the bad trade deals that America has gotten into. In the third minute or so of this speech, he was talking about the border. And it's no wonder that Americans were paying attention. And then again, before he was barely over 4 minutes into the speech, here's what Donald Trump had to say.
Islamic terrorism is eating up large portions of the Middle East. They become rich. I'm in competition with them. They just built a hotel in Syria. Can you believe this? They built a hotel. When I have to build a hotel, I pay interest. They don't have to pay interest because they took the oil that when we left Iraq, I said we should have taken. So now ISIS has the oil. And what they don't have, Iran has. And in 19, and I will tell you this, and I said it very strongly, years ago, I said, and I love the military, and I want to have the strongest military that we've ever had, and we need it more now than ever, but I said, don't hit Iraq, because you're going to totally destabilize the Middle East. Iran is going to take over the Middle East. Iran and somebody else will get the oil. And it turned out that Iran is now taking over Iraq. Think of it. Iran is taking over Iraq. And they're taking it over big league. We spent $2 trillion in Iraq. $2 trillion. We lost thousands of lives. Thousands in Iraq. We have wounded soldiers who I love. I love. They're great. All over the place. Thousands and thousands of wounded soldiers. And we have nothing. We can't even go there. We have nothing. And every time we give Iraq equipment, the first time a bullet goes off in the air, they leave it. Last week I read 2,300 Humvees, these are big vehicles, were left behind for the enemy. 2,000, you would say maybe two, maybe four. 2,300 sophisticated vehicles, they ran, and the enemy took them.
We need Trump now!
We need Trump now! This was 4 years ago during the campaign, the announcement speech. 3+ years ago, it was four. But when Trump came down the escalator, does he sound any different as a candidate than he sounds and acts as president? That's why it is so phenomenal, so fantastic, and so impressive to know that if the Democrats keep going the way they're going, 5 more years from Donald Trump is virtually in the bag. All right. We've been promising some time with Rob Nadelson on impeachment. One of the things I love about this business is staying in close conversation with really smart people. Helps me be a better radio announcer, understand more about what's going on around me. And my relationship with my next guest goes back, gosh, it's got to be 6 or 7 years now when I was doing a daily radio show. We'd try and get him on once a week or as close to that as we could. I run into him periodically at the Independence Institute. He's a former law professor, has been cited by the United States Supreme Court on numerous occasions, author of a great book, The Original Constitution, What It Actually Said and Meant. And I'm sure glad to call him friend. His name's Rob Nadelson, and he joins us now. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, and I'm proud to call you friend, Randy.
You better believe it. But I got to tell you, Rob, I think you've got some explaining to do. Listen to this.
So, Robert, my first question is this. Why did the House not call you as a witness during impeachment since you actually know what it's about?
Well, first, Deborah, I have to say It is a kick to be on with you.
Great.
I'd actually rather be on with you than Randy anyway. You know?
Oh, hey.
Yeah, you know, Deb Flora back on December 28th had you on Wake Up with Randy Corcoran. She was doing 6 to 9. I came in 9 to 12 that day. And that's what I awoke to from my dear friend Rob Nadelson. What do you have to say for yourself?
She's better looking than you are, Randy, even over the radio.
Yeah, good point. Well, you know, when I talked to you after that interview and thought about having you on within a couple of weeks, I had assumed that Nancy Pelosi would have moved the articles of impeachment over to the Senate by now, had no idea that they were going to hold them up as long as they have. And I want to dig into that with you a little bit here in a couple of minutes. Since we've got lots of time with you this morning, though, I'd like to talk to you a minute about a speech that I gave at the Western Conservative Summit. And you told me you had an opportunity to go back and see it. Only about 12 minutes long. If people are interested, they can go to 710knus.com, Wake Up with Randy Corcoran. It's right there at the top of the page. But this was right after the president had decided to obey the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and the ruling that came down that said, Mr. President, while you have the legal authority to do so, and historically it's been done before, I, the Chief Justice, do not think that you've given sufficient reasoning for placing the citizenship question into the upcoming census, and therefore I'm going to issue an order that you can't do it. And after taking a look at that ruling, and it's been a while now since I've looked at it specifically, but after taking a look at that ruling and looking back over some of the history, I thought that would have been, setting aside the political consequences, that might have been a great opportunity for the President of the United States to say, you know, Mr. Chief Justice, thank you very much for sharing, but you've said I'm constitutionally empowered to do it. It's legal for me to do it. You don't like my reasons, but I'm going to go ahead and put the citizenship question into the census anyway. Of course, the folks at Western Conservative Summit liked that. That was one of the great applause lines during that speech. But what was your perception when you heard that? It was a short speech, so it didn't really get to dig too deeply in.
Well, first, my perception regarding the ruling itself is that it's an example of how there's one rule for this president that is different from the rule for all other presidents. We've seen this over and over again with the courts making rulings against President Trump that I don't think you'd make against any other president. In this case, for example, the court did not apply the same kind of deference that it would normally give toward the executive branch or administrative agencies. The second question, the wider question that you addressed in your remarks is, to what extent are other branches of government bound by pronouncements of the courts in general and of the Supreme Court in particular? And what you did is you read part of a speech by Abraham Lincoln in which Abraham Lincoln reacted to the notorious Dred Scott decision, the decision by the Supreme Court in 1857 that African Americans could never, under any circumstances, become American citizens. And President Lincoln's position is that that decision was simply not the last word. This whole issue of judicial review is a complicated one on many levels, as you know, Randy. There are people out there who say, you know, the founders never intended for the Supreme Court to be able to declare laws void or unconstitutional at all. That was a power that Justice Marshall assumed in the famous case of Marbury versus Madison in 1803. I think that decision is clearly wrong, or that position is clearly wrong. That is to say that judicial review wasn't anticipated. In fact, we have numerous statements by the founders and expectation by both proponents and opponents of the Constitution that the Supreme Court would consider the constitutionality of laws. On the other hand, there are those people who might be called judicial supremacists who take the position that, well, once the Supreme Court has decreed, that's it. All the discussion is over. And that position is also clearly wrong. The founders anticipated that there would be resistance to Supreme Court overreaching, and that constitutional amendments would be passed to reverse the Supreme Court. In fact, the founding generation passed a constitutional amendment to reverse the Supreme Court. That was the 11th Amendment, adopted in the 1790s. So it is healthy, I think, and here I'm agreeing with you, for branches of government other than the court not to be lawless, but to push back sometimes when they think the court's gone too far. And I suppose that inserting a provision in the census questionnaire would have been a good example of it. If the court really thought that that was unconstitutional, then they could the entire court could review it after a full hearing, which I'm not sure there really was in this case.
Well, and of course, I brought you on to talk about what I refer to almost constantly as the impeachment hoax or the impeachment scam. Don't want to get overly bogged down here. But I think one of the reasons it became important to me to address this at the Western Conservative Summit the way I did was because, you know, we had all the lawyers coming in and talking about the big wins at the Supreme Court. And there were some good ones last year for religious freedom, which was the underlying topic of last year's Western Conservative Summit. And that was all great, but nobody was talking about the judicial overreach issue. And it's never more prevalent than when we see an individual federal court judge from Washington or Hawaii or Washington, D.C., wherever, issue an injunction to some action of the executive and put a screeching halt on it for at least several months until it can get up to the Supreme Court, which almost inevitably then overrules what the single federal district judge did. And so this might be a great topic for us to have you back on and explore in a future interview with you, talking with Rob Nadelson from the Independence Institute.
Randy, let's make one more quick point about that.
Yep, and I'll...
We do get too tied up on the Supreme Court being the supreme law of the land and so forth. Actually, it's the people's will that's the supreme court law of the land. That's one reason I'm involved in the Convention of States project, because it gives the people a way to overturn rogue Supreme Court decisions. So I fundamentally agree with your position.
And that'll be another great topic of conversation. Hopefully we make this kind of a regular occurrence for us. When you were with Deb Flora back on December 28th, people can download that podcast. It was in the third hour of the early morning edition of Wake Up with Randy Corporan. You guys spent some time talking about, you know, what was still kind of fresh in everybody's mind. The impeachment hearings had concluded. We'd heard from the panel of experts. And I encourage anybody who wants kind of a refresher on how that all went down to go back and listen to that hour. Since we're now here in the roaring 20s and looking ahead to what may happen in the Senate, just a couple of points that I'd like to reiterate for folks who might not have heard that interview before. And one of them, this was really, really interesting, because when Noah Feldman, the Harvard law scholar, one of the star Democrat witnesses in the judiciary hearing, wrote a couple of days after it became clear that Nancy Pelosi was not going to transmit the articles of impeachment to the Senate right away. And just before I went on the air, I think the day before, he wrote an article where he said, well, then the president isn't actually impeached. And I was pretty excited about that at the time. It took me a couple days before I realized exactly what he was doing. He was actually trying to postulate the position to give Nancy Pelosi all the time she felt she needed to try and dig up more evidence, see if she could, you know, change the public perception, the public lack of popularity on impeachment, etc. Seems to me this was kind of a coordinated effort between the two of them to try and buy Nancy Pelosi some more time. But whether that's true or not, and I know you don't often weigh in on the politics of an issue, what is the status of impeachment while Nancy Pelosi holds those articles in her pocket?
Well, let me first clarify something. Noah Feldman is a very fine scholar. He has made major contributions in religion and the law, and he has a good biography out about Madison. But he has no history of studying the area of impeachment. I mean, he's written a number of popular articles about it, but he's never actually, as far as I can tell, published any serious work on impeachment. And by the way, that was true of one of the other Democratic witnesses as well. Gerhardt and Turley, the other two, did have the heft. So I think that Professor Feldman isn't really speaking accurately when he says that impeachment's not effective until notice is delivered.
Yeah, and because we're running low on time, got a late start on this interview, let me just summarize that, you know, there are certain acts of Congress. Once a law is signed by the president, you know, it applies to people. Other things that can happen where you don't actually have to deliver papers to someone for the act to have been completed and to be binding. One of the first cases you learn in law school, Marbury versus Madison, was about whether someone who'd been appointed, but the new incoming president withheld delivering his papers of appointment to that person, whether the appointment was actually in effect or not, whether that person was actually, I think it was the Secretary of State. Been a lot of years since law school. And, you know, distinguish that from my upcoming lawsuit against Rob Nadelson for favoring Deb Flora over me in interviews. I could file a lawsuit, I could hold it in my hand, hold it in my pocket, but until I actually had those papers personally served on Rob Nadelson, he wouldn't be obligated to respond to that lawsuit, and it could simply be dismissed out of hand. Nadelson's position, and I think he's right, is that Donald Trump is impeached, and it's up to the Senate now to act, since Nancy Pelosi has said she will deliver the articles next week. We'll spend some time with Rob Nadelson asking about what he expects moving forward. So anyway, we do have to take a break here at 10:42. Don't forget, we've got Lauren Boebert coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. Some great audio from Representative Matt Gaetz, who from the outside would appear that he took a position contrary to the president when he voted with the Democrats on a war powers resolution. And all that's ahead, so long as you stick around right here on Wake Up with Randy Corcoran at 710 KNUS.
Now, back to Wake Up with Randy Corcoran on News Talk 710, KNUS.
I'm the man who holds high places, must be the one who start to mold a new reality closer to the heart, closer to the heart.
All right, I wish we had more time. I do love Rush. Tribute, of course, to drummer Neil Peart, who died this week. It's 10:48, about 12 minutes to go until 11 o'clock. Do not forget the rally on the west steps of the Capitol today, 1 o'clock, followed by a march, 2 o'clock, in support of protecting life in the womb. And our Arapaho Tea Party meeting next Tuesday, 6:30 to 8:30 at the South Metro Fire Rescue Building. If you have any questions about our Tea Party meetings, all you got to do is send me an email at 710knus.com. Find Wake Up with Randy Corcoran. Click email the show. I check them daily, and we'll make sure we get you where you need to be. So much to talk about as we head into impeachment and the legislative session that started. And a few other surprises for you as well. But time is short, so talking with my former friend, Rob Nadelson, a constitutional scholar, former friend because he likes Deborah Flora better. But I'll get over it. And, you know, and of course,
come on,
Nancy.
Randy, now, what red-blooded American male doesn't?
All right, I get it. You know, Adam Schiff, Nancy Pelosi, everybody on the Democrat side, the reason they had to move this so quick, had to rush the articles through, get them in before Christmas, is because Donald Trump presents a clear and present danger, and then Nancy Pelosi puts them in her pocket throughout the entire Christmas break and already a week plus in since we've gotten back here into the roaring 20s. Based on what you've described, set aside the obstruction of Congress, obvious BS to anybody with half a brain who looks at it fairly. Set those aside. When Barack Obama made this statement to the former president of Russia, was this an impeachable offense?
This is my last election. Yeah. And after my election, I have more flexibility.
This is my last election. After my election, I will have more flexibility. They were talking about weapons and Ukraine and Crimea and all kinds of things. Was that an impeachable offense?
Let's clarify exactly what he meant by that. What he meant by that is, you know, a deal between our countries probably would be the advantage of your country and my country. But I'm going to sell out the interest of both of our countries to make sure I get reelected first. Now, that sounds a lot like the fiduciary duty of breach of self-dealing. That is to say, putting your own interest over that of your country. Though when pressed as to whether it's an impeachable offense, I would have to say no. And the reason I would say no is because when you determine whether somebody committed a high misdemeanor, that is to say, breached a fiduciary duty, you have to consider the conduct of other people in the office. You have to consider how foreign affairs are normally conducted, how presidents normally act. This, by the way, is also true of Joe Biden's famous demand that a prosecutor be fired in the Ukraine or they're not going to get aid.
Well, gee, Rob, as long as you brought it up, let's let people hear it. Hold on.
They said, you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said, I said, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Well, son of a bitch. Got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid.
An impeachable offense for then-Vice President Joe Biden?
No, he was carrying out Obama administration foreign policy. Look, this stuff goes on in foreign affairs all the time. The people at the top, they're politicians. They tend to wheel and deal. That's partly what it's about. You know, Randy, we have never in our history, ever, as far as I know, even whispered the idea of impeaching a president because of conduct of foreign affairs. The founders created the presidency as a single executive office precisely so you would have one person who would have power to act decisively, secretly, with dispatch and so forth in foreign affairs. And they recognized it can be tough business. So when you're judging how a president conducts foreign affairs, it's not like you're judging, let's say, how somebody handles money. It's a completely different field. And when you determine whether something's an impeachable offense, you have to take into account the larger context. That's why the Senate would be absolutely justified in calling Biden and Obama as witnesses, and for that matter, George W. Bush and Carter as witnesses, in order to demonstrate how presidents actually conduct foreign affairs. As I mentioned, it's a rough business with pretty low standards.
Continuing our conversation with Rob Nadelson from the Independence Institute, constitutional law scholar, I was able to play audio of Obama basically quid pro quoing with Russia, Joe Biden quid pro quoing with Ukraine. And just to remind folks, since it seems to often be lost in the conversations and the exaggerations from the Democrats, and we don't have a recording of it, so I'll have to read it. But here's what the president said in the phone call with the president of Ukraine that led to this whole impeachment scam. And this was after several minutes of them going back and forth, telling each other how much they love each other and, you know, how great they are and how great they're going to surround themselves with the best people and make relationships really good and all of that kind of stuff. And then here was the kicker. The president said, I would like you to do us a favor, though, because our country's been through a lot and Ukraine knows a lot about it. I would like you to find out what happened with this whole situation with Ukraine. They say CrowdStrike. I guess you have one of your wealthy people, the server. They say Ukraine has it. There are a lot of things that went on, the whole situation. I think you're surrounding yourself with some of the same people. I would like to have the attorney general call you or your people, and I would like you to get to the bottom of it. And he went on from there, and then big response from lengthy response from President Zelensky, and then the president did actually name Biden by name. He asked the president to talk to Giuliani, And he mentioned there's a lot of talk about not Joe Biden, but about Joe Biden's son, Hunter, and that Joe Biden stopped the prosecution. And a lot of people want to find out about that. So whatever you can do with the attorney general would be great. That's it. That is the source of impeachment. We know that the Republicans, they both say there was no pressure. They're talking points. The transcript shows no conditionality. Ukraine didn't know aid was held back at the time of the call. Ukraine never took any of the actions they were supposedly being pressured to take. Set all that aside. If they were feeling pressure, if they were aware that the money was being withheld until they investigated this corruption, and even though that might have benefited President Donald Trump, if Joe Biden becomes the nominee, I think Joe Biden's the easiest defeatable nominee for President Trump. But setting all that aside, even if all those things were true, would what the president said and did have been an impeachable offense?
You know, you're saying, and I, in my earlier comments, assumed that there was a quid pro quo. Assuming there is a quid pro quo, I'm not sure that's an impeachable offense because of the way foreign affairs is conducted. That tends to set the standard, however low that might be, for whether a president commits a high misdemeanor. But you're also right to point out that there may not have been a quid pro quo at all.
Yeah.
Certainly President Zelensky doesn't say there's a quid pro quo. The person that Eric Sondland spoke to, former ambassador to the EU from the United States, the person he said spoke to allegedly about a quid pro quo says he didn't think there was one. Sondland presumed there was a quid pro quo, but stated explicitly in testimony that the mainstream media largely ignored that he had no knowledge of a quid pro quo, had no knowledge of why the aid was held up.
Just his
no
assumption.
Knowledge of who held it up. Yeah. No knowledge of why it was released. Now, that's exceptionally weak evidence to impeach a president on.
Rob, we need to pause it right there, so hold your thought. We didn't even get to look ahead yet, so I am going to go ahead and keep you for a third segment, if that's okay with you. And when we come back, let's make sure we answer the question about what is next, assuming and once the articles of impeachment are finally transmitted to the Senate and the thing moves forward. We'll wrap up our interview and our time with Rob Nadelson when we come back. Stay with us here at Wake Up with Randy Corporan on 710 KNUS.
Hi, it's Peter Boyles. Have a great weekend back here Monday morning, 5 a.m., first place to talk in the city, the voice of the people. We're going to look at the situation with firearms in Virginia. There's a revolt taking place. They have sanctuaries for people with the Second Amendment. It's coming your way with the progressives in charge in Colorado. Have a good weekend. See you Monday morning, 5 a.m.
Peter Boyles, weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on News Talk 710 KNUS.